This week on Writers, Inc.
The knowledge I've learned, I'm able to help disseminate through all these different places, and gosh, every day I learn new things.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories. All have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, it's Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna Brown.
I'm Kevin Tumlinson. And there is no JD.
There is no JD.
JD is skiing or something.
Yeah, welcome to Writers, Inc.
Welcome to Writers, Inc. So I was telling you I had a stupid skiing story.
Yes.
So I can go into it very, very briefly. I am not a skier. I was an ice skater. And the mountains where we have, where I live, are like near Detroit. And they're literally garbage dumps that have been converted into ski hills.
Okay. What?
Yeah, yeah. So they're like, most of them are. There's a couple that aren't, but they're old garbage dumps that they've then covered with grass and turned into ski hills.
I mean, I guess that's the whole island of Manhattan, or at least like one end of it.
Yeah. So, you know, I was a young teen. The only ski hills I'd ever been on are these garbage dump hills in near Detroit, right? I'm like, I can do a double black diamond. I'm fabulous. Anyway, sometimes I would fall. Our generation, 16 years old, I went to Quebec with a bunch of other teenagers. I'm like, at Mont Saint-Anne, don't come at me on my pronunciation. I'm like, I can ski a bit. I went on a medium hill. And the ski lift is going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. That thing is freaking 2,000 feet, and they dropped me on it. And I almost died. I almost went off the edge of a cliff. Like, I was like, what the hell is this? Anyway, there are ski hills and there are ski hills. So that is.
There are ski hills and then there are ski hills.
Yeah.
Happy to be alive.
I just remember the first time I was a brand new skier, and then we went up, and the first time I got off on my own, because I was doing the lessons with everybody, you know, the whole bunny slopes and the, you know, wedge your feet. And so I'm like, I got this. And so we all left, and we ended up on a black diamond slope. Yeah. And without really realizing what any of that meant. And so I'm like sailing down the side of this mountain, and I'm trying to wedge my feet so that I can stop myself, but that's not working. So
yeah,
I survived. That's the only good thing that came out of that story.
Yeah. I still have like flashbacks. I'm like, they don't mark that. There's like no markings, no like rails or anything. You're just like off the edge of a cliff. I don't know. Maybe it's better now, because that was a long time ago, but I'm just happy to be here.
Some of those ski slopes, like they say, like, have you watched those videos of people? And that's like they look like they're literally just going down a cliff, and they do it like
pretty much
their own free will. Like,
I know someone who lives near me is someone I work with, husband, who drops out of helicopters just down like verticals, like just they jump out. I'm like, you're insane. I would never.
There was a time in my life where I would have done that. That time is not now, though. So that's not going to happen now.
But you would have, though, at one point in your life?
I've done things like that.
I probably would have.
Yeah.
Wait, when I was a teenager, I would have. I had no frontal lobes.
Absolutely,
I did some
no way.
Stuff.
Even lacking frontal lobes, there is absolutely no way I would have ever done anything like that.
I jumped out of a plane, so, you know, it's not that much different.
I've crash landed in airplanes, so I'm good.
I don't even like getting on board fully functioning airplanes that are intended to keep you inside of it the whole time.
No.
I'm a little more like that now. So, all right, first episode of the new year.
Yeah.
What? I guess technically it's the second episode in the new year, or is it?
No, this. I think this. I think the other one came out on the 31st. So this.
Okay.
Be the first. Yeah.
So, what are we all? What do we got in the hopper for 2026?
Well, my plans, I want to write two books this year. See if I can do
Okay.
it. Go to three conferences
Okay.
Nice.
and do better with my social media. Like, that's not just I'm making plans.
Yeah.
And I guess everything else, there's things I wish I'm wishing will happen, but I can't plan for them because I have no control. So that's it.
Yes. I think funny, we didn't even talk about this ahead of time, but I think that our goals kind of align. Like, I want to finish editing the book I'm editing and get that back out to agents, write two books, get better at social media, work on my health. My real goal is I want to be able to do five pull-ups by the end of the year.
Oh
So
gosh.
that's
You want to
my
do that with me?
okay.
We can do. I
Yeah.
don't think I can even do one. I have the world's
I
weirdest
can
shoulders.
almost do one right now, almost, with like a jump start. So I want to be able to do five, no jump start. That's
My
my goal by the
gosh.
end of the year.
Just do our angel hangs.
I can tell you that this is a perfectly attainable goal, Jenna. If you did one now, 6 months from now, you do the second one. I mean, really, by the end of the year, you could have all
No, five
five.
I want to be
Oh,
able to,
well,
like,
I was on board with you until then. I'm like, yeah,
yeah,
you know
no,
what? I'm
like,
going to do five pull-ups this year, too.
yes, five throughout the entire year is very doable. I want to be able to do five in a row from a dead hang. That's
Yeah.
my goal.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You can totally do it.
What about you, Kevin? What are your plans for this year?
I'm going to finish up the current book I'm working on. That's the biggest goal for the front end of the year. But I don't know. I've never been very good at planning. I'm not good at saying, oh, I'm going to accomplish this year. It's more general things. I'm just going to get better at X. Kind of like you said with social media. I'm just going to get better at a select number of things in my life. But I already lead such an amazing, great life. So it's hard to pick something new to
There you go.
do. I don't have any plans. We everything is so up in the air for me and Kara right now that we don't even know where we're going to be living next month right now. So
Wow.
my plan is to have a home somewhere this year, and if I can pull that off, it's a winning year. That's
That's
it.
awesome.
Nice. I think that's also attainable. I believe in you,
And
Kevin.
I'm going to do five pull-ups this
I
year.
believe in you. Can you
Once, one every 2 months.
wait. Can you do pull-ups now though? 'Cause this you can't.
You know what? I have a funky shoulder, and so it prevents me from doing a whole lot of things right now. So I got to figure out a way to get the shoulder
I
taken
have
care
messed
of.
going.
Shoulders
Yeah.
too. Yeah. But I'll do five pull-ups one-handed. How's that
I
this
love
year?
it. Wow, way to one
Yeah.
up my goal.
There we go.
Oh
No, but I mean for the year. We'll do
For the
five
year, five
pull-ups
this year, one
total,
hand. Oh,
one-handed.
okay.
Not
All right.
consecutively.
And also I'm gonna kind of cheat and do that thing where you sort of your feet, your heels are on the ground and you're just sort of leaning back and pulling. That's I'm gonna do that one that
I
way.
see. I don't think that's actually a pull-up, but you know what,
Think it is a
Kevin? I'll
pull-up.
give it to you. I'll give it to you.
Aren't pull-ups those little miniature diapers that mimic underwear that kids wear? Isn't that pull-ups? I'll get
Those,
five of those this
yes,
year.
they are. They are
Okay. All
pull-ups.
right.
I'm gonna
Nice
wear five
loophole.
pull-ups this year.
Kevin is king of the loopholes.
I am
No,
king of the
that's what I
loophole.
know.
There's my plans for 2026 to master all loopholes.
I
Oh,
have faith
Kevin.
in you that you can
Speaking
do
of
it.
loopholes,
Speaking of loopholes, what is in the news?
in the news, dragons, sex, and the Bible. What drove the book business this year? Genre fiction boomed while nonfiction and YA struggled. Adult genre fiction, especially romanticy, thrillers, and romance, drove sales in 2025, while new nonfiction releases lagged and YA sales fell sharply. Faith, romance, and comics were surprise growth areas. Print books still account for roughly three quarters of sales, while ebooks continue a long decline and audiobooks have plateaued short term, even as audio revenue has quadrupled over the past decade. Bookstores proved resilient and amid industry strain, despite rising costs, AI-driven slop, fewer distributors, and book bans. Physical bookstores expanded with hundreds of new indie shops and dozens of new Barnes and Noble locations opening nationwide,
There we go.
etc.
Yeah.
All
Genre
right.
fiction did well. I think it's going to continue to do well.
Dragons, sex, and the Bible. I mean, I feel like that's been driving book sales since the dawn of humanity,
That's
let's be
probably
honest.
true.
Right?
Embo say,
Like,
isn't it kind of interesting though that every year those categories are the ones that always continue to perform? Like those are the cottage of the whole business, I
well,
think.
obviously, because everyone, no matter who you are, what age you are, and how much you profess that this isn't true, is obsessed with dragons. This is just facts, right?
That's
And
facts.
if you read enough sex, you have to turn to the Bible at some point just to make yourself feel like you're not a degenerate. So, I mean, there we go.
To
Dragons,
atone
sex, and
for
the
what's on
Bible.
your Kindle. All right.
There
I guess it's
you
interesting
go.
that audiobooks have plateaued, but I guess that had to happen at some point since they were just
Yeah.
rising and rising.
What do you think the impact of AI is going to have on all that though? Like not the genre. Let's forget the genres, forget the writing itself, but AI audio has kind of kicked in. Do you think that's going to revitalize audiobooks, or is it going to make it even worse?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely think we've talked about this before that there will be sort of like a divergence that's happening. Like, you're gonna have people who just want what they want when they want it fast and easy. And I think
Yeah.
that AI will fill that gap. But I also think that you're gonna have just as equal a pull towards that, like, high quality. The voice
Yeah.
actors, the production quality, writing quality, all of that will never go away. So I think that you'll just see like the two will sort of emerge as like distinct but separate. But I
Yeah.
don't think one will take over the other.
All right, we'll see.
We'll see.
2026 is the year. We'll see.
It's the year.
All right, next up, the cultural works becoming public domain in 2026 from Betty Boop to Nancy Drew. A new year means I can finally do that fan fiction I wanted to do. A new year means new works entering the public domain. Literary highlights include William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon, Waddy Piper's The Little Engine That Could, the first four books of the Nancy Drew detective series, and The Murder at the Vicarage, Agatha Christie's first Miss Marple mystery.
You know someone's gonna make a little engine that could horror movie. Like, I'm just
Oh,
waiting for
I
that.
can tell. I can absolutely see that.
I would definitely do a remake of The Little Engine That Could.
Oh, we got a perfect storm going here. We can have Murder on the Little Engine That Could, an Agatha Christie
Ooh.
mystery solved by
Yes.
Nancy Drew.
There
Oh,
you
go.
perfect
Perfect.
mashup. I love it.
Kevin, when does that come out?
Yeah.
Give me 20 minutes. I can
Okay.
throw in a little bit of Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon just for flavor,
Oh,
to
I
give
love
it
it. Just
that
for
nice
flavor.
smoky flavor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is interesting to me because in years past, recently, the things that have come into public domain have been kind of humdrum. Like, there hasn't been a lot. I mean, I know Mickey Mouse came in, at least
Yeah. Oh, the
Steamboat
Warner the
Willie.
Pooh.
Willie.
Franchises went
Yeah. Yeah.
crazy with those.
So, yeah, that was there. But I think we're finally seeing some stuff that people could really utilize. Like, The Maltese Falcon, is a great book, a great story.
Yeah.
And like you said, The Little Engine That Could, horror is inevitable. But Nancy Drew is a great character as well. So it'll be really interesting to see what we get out of it. I'm
Yeah.
kind of interested. I'm also kind of like, yeah, don't go doing that. There's a part of me that's like, don't bother with this. But now I really want
I don't
to
know.
do my own version of Maltese Falcon.
I want to do the little engine that couldn't. Just like bed rots for 20 pages.
The
I'm
little
not doing
engine that
that.
could murder you.
Yeah, I don't know. I like retellings, but I do like them when they are more cleverly done so that you actually don't really know that it's a retelling until like you're kind of like either at the end or like you kind of start to see the fingerprints a little bit, but it still stands up as its own story. Those are the ones I tend to really enjoy.
Oh, fair.
All right, final story. Predictions. What lies ahead for the book trade in 2026? Beautiful books keep winning. Expect premium print to stay hot. Special editions, collectability, and book as decor don't look like a fading trend, especially in genre fiction where packaging is part of the product. Audio keeps expanding and gets weirder in a good way. The article predicts continued audiobook growth plus more experimentation, audio-first releases, premium narration as a differentiator, and a blending of formats like a mashup of audiobooks, podcasts, and voice-driven experiences. AI becomes increasingly normal in workflows, but 2026 is framed as a, quote, reckoning year where the industry pushes harder for copyright protection, transparency, and clear labeling so human-created work stays identifiable and licensable. That last one's pointless nonsense. We can toss that one out. But the audio thing, the mixed format thing sparked an idea in me as soon as I read it, which was that concept of do your audiobook, and then you know how TV shows and stuff have like companion
Like extras.
podcasts. Like you could actually do the podcast within the story and make it a legitimate podcast. Like, I could see having characters tuning into the Writers Inc. podcast, for example, and we're talking about, we've interviewed an author, and this we've interviewed the author who is the murder victim of this story. We could do fun stuff like that, man. I'm kind of excited about this as a concept.
What is a voice-driven experience? I'm more interested in delving into that. So you got audiobooks, podcasts, and voice-driven experiences.
There's
Don't
been
know
a
what that
few. I
means.
remember there was
I
a
don't know
book.
what that means.
What was it? It was a YA book, like 5 years ago, maybe, I think, called Sadie. And it was like half written in like a podcast format and like half narrative. And you were trying to solve this mystery of what happened to this runaway girl. But when they released it, they released the audio versions as the podcast. So like you could listen to those scenes and it sounded like a podcast, you know? And I thought, God, that was just so clever because that was part of their marketing was you could listen to these clips and, you know, like that really got me interested in the book. Like, what's going on here? So I think maybe I don't know if that's going to be a voice-driven experience, but I do like it when I guess those modes sort of intersect, to just give a little bit more, I don't know, something to, you know, that reading experience. It's a lot of fun.
Well, here's what AI says that is. It says a voice-driven experience is an interaction with technology where users control and receive information primarily through spoken commands and audio feedback, creating hands-free, natural conversations with devices
Oh,
or
so you're chatting
applications.
with your book. That's probably what it is. I
So
get
yeah,
it.
I could see that. I think we're overdue for a rebirth of Choose Your Own Adventure, which is
In audio style,
now. You could absolutely do that with AI now, and make it a completely like give the AI a sort of criteria. Here's where it's going to start. Here's where it's going to end. Fill in the middle, and the reader is interacting with the story. I could see doing something like that, especially
And
by
it would
voice.
prevent people like me who never enjoyed Choose Your Own Adventure because I had to read it all the way through, front to back. In order, and I don't know if you've ever done that, but it actually
I
makes
have.
for quite a chaotic and not so much enjoyable experience. But I just couldn't do it. I
Every
had to know what
single
both, yeah,
option. I
like I
was
just
the
had to, I had to. So, Choose Your Own Adventures and I did not get along as a kid.
You know that manuscript you've been editing for the past year? One that's almost done, but never quite gets there? Well, right now, it's crying out for help from this episode's sponsor, AutoCrit. Quite possibly the most powerful all-in-one writing platform, AutoCrit puts an entire publishing team in the palm of your hand. Get access to customizable automated alpha and beta readers, plus series-wide story analysis, marketing support, line editing tools that can help you catch the mistakes you miss. And even more, including exclusive craft events only for members. The value is insane, And right now, you can grab lifetime access for just one payment. No monthly fees, no usage limits, no caps, no tokens. At AutoCrit, unlimited means unlimited. It's time to finish your book. Start making real progress, escape revision limbo, and publish with confidence story after story. Check out autocrit.com/JD to save 50% on lifetime membership right now. That's autocrit.com/JD.
Up this week, it's Christopher Locke, the Director of Membership and Member Services for IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. Christopher helps members as they travel along their publishing journeys, and his major projects are the Innovative Voice Program, and he does a podcast, Inside Independent Publishing, with IBPA. So here he is, Christopher Locke. Okay, Christopher Locke, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. We have some exciting things to talk about, but let's start at the beginning. How did you get started in publishing?
Yeah, so I worked in TV for a decade. So I mostly was in TV, and then I've been a writer since I was a kid. And so then at some point I was like, you know, I'm not really creating material that to me feels like something that I'm 100 years from now, people are going to still be looking at and appreciating. So I left that career and wrote two novels and learned very quickly that most authors don't make money as their full-time, you know, career from being an author. That was kind of a punch in the gut. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I had to learn very quickly, okay, I need to start up again and have a whole new career. But then I loved publishing. So I got into the publishing world.
Interesting. So you did two novels, and did you publish those traditionally or did you do that on your own?
Yeah. So I'm an author publisher. So I looked at all the options, and from all the research I could find, trying to get a literary agent, trying to get a publisher to support my work, and also making sure that the end result was exactly what I wanted it to be without someone telling me, nope, we're going to change the whole thing. Raccoon's the main character, and they might be like, you know what, dogs, people love dogs, let's, you know, and I'm like, but I just didn't want people to come in and change too much, and then the royalties felt like a better opportunity as well. So yeah, the author publisher route, but as you know, I came from TV, so I didn't know the whole process of publishing a book, so I kind of learned from scratch, and it was way more than I thought it was going to be. So interesting process to learn all that.
Yeah, for sure. And there is a lot to learn, and it's not all in the same place. And some of it is trial and error. So you've done these two books and you're like, wow, this is more than I expected. And then how did you get into working with IBPA? Did that come like right after, or was that while in between? What happened there?
So after I published the two books, the whole time I was working all of these various small jobs, right? Like just to have money coming in. But when I decided, I didn't really decide, when my bank account got low enough, I was like, okay, I need more money coming in. I learned so much in this process. I didn't want to go back into TV. I wanted now to move into book publishing, but I live in Los Angeles, and I was looking around and I was like, wow, all of the major publishers are in New York City. Yeah. So I looked around and I came across Independent Book Publishers Association. And I now know that it was like the perfect thing for me. Rather than working at an indie publisher or directly to publishing, I'm actually kind of like this overview where I can help all these publishers and all these authors, and I can help them succeed in publishing. Whereas if I was just working at one publisher, and by the way, amazing work. Yeah. But what I love about it is that I'm able to actually spread like the knowledge I've learned. I'm able to help disseminate through all these different places. And gosh, every day I learn new things. So, and by the way, I'm the director of membership. And so I'm in charge of trying to make sure that I get new members, but then the current members, meeting whatever needs they have in terms of trying to get their books out there and also learn about publishing and all that.
Yeah, so you have an interesting perspective. So you're working for IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association, and you're also an author. So that gives you maybe some insight that people that are just publishers don't have. How did those two things kind of connect? Like, tell me what you do as an author and as your job.
So what helps is, and our staff is made up of people that all have different experiences, and I feel grateful working with everyone. So our CEO, Andrea Fleck Nisbet, she used to work at Workman, which is an indie publisher, and then she worked at Ingram, which is the biggest distributor of books in the world. She also worked at HarperCollins. So she has all of that information, and she's able to then use that in all the things we do. So she's amazing. And then for me, I actually, write and publish books. And so that I knew that aspect. I didn't know as much about the indie publishing aspect. So as I've worked there, I've learned more and more about all the things that indie publishers have to do to publish other people's books. And so we have four different kind of main quadrants of how we help publishers. So we have educational opportunities, so things like webinars, and we have a magazine to teach about publishing. We have networking opportunities, and as I'm sure you've experienced, and really a lot of what this podcast is about, it's like that networking. It's learning from other people that also publish, that also write. So we have 4,000 members, and you can then connect with them and ask them questions. We also have book marketing programs, and so then we are able to help them sell books to libraries, bookstores, consumers, the international market. And then the last of the four is discounts on all these major brands that publishers and authors use. So Ingram Spark, Bowker, where people buy ISBNs,
Yeah.
Kirkus Reviews. We have over 100, so it's a ton. But as you know, it can get costly to
Yes.
publish a book. And so these are ways that they can save money, and then membership ends up paying for itself.
Absolutely. Okay, let's start with the first one, education. So what learning resources do members kind of tend to find most valuable?
So the webinars are really helpful. We do multiple a year, and they cover everything from how to get sales on Amazon to distribution. What is it? But then we also have large indie publishers, and so they've been doing publishing for decades. So they don't need kind of one-on-one stuff. They have different things that they're trying to learn about. So we have a thing called the IBPA Think Tank. And for them, it's this education slash networking where then they're meeting with other people that are doing what they do, but at the level that they do it.
Yeah.
And so it's an in-person event. It's right next to our conference. So that's also another educational opportunity. Once a year, our next one, 2026, is in the it's in Portland, Oregon, and it's in May 14th through 16th. So I'm sure with you, something about still meeting in person, it gives you, it's like the casual way of talking to people and networking without it feeling so formal. And you can have, whatever, like you're just like in the lobby of the hotel. Maybe you're taking a quick break from the sessions and you're talking to someone. You find out, oh, wow, you're an editor. I'm looking for an editor. So yeah, I find those to be really helpful.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite part of conferences is just talking to people outside of sessions. So yeah, with that, you talk about networking opportunities or, community building. I find that is so important as an author. We need to have community. We need to have people who are ahead of us that can help us out. What are the networking opportunities, in IBPA?
Yeah, so those are some that I just mentioned, but another one that's really helpful, we have a Slack workspace, and we have like online, like virtual networking opportunities, and those are helpful, but if you work during the day, you might not be able to attend that. So something like the Slack workspace, I don't know if people haven't heard of Slack. It's just a place kind of like any other like social media app where you can just post questions about publishing, and then at any time, someone, whatever, let's say they're up at 2 in the morning, they can answer those questions at that time. And also ideally we have members who go in and they just are really great at answering other people's questions. And sometimes people have just connected, like they're like, hey, I'm an editor or a publisher, looking for authors or whatever. And it's a way for them to then, yeah, like kind of just meet each other and talk to each other, but in a private space
Yeah.
rather than it being on whatever, like I don't know, TikTok or Instagram or something. It's like, oh, we're all publishers here. We're all members of IBPA. And so it gives them a place to meet that it's kind of like a little bit of a barrier between just kind of just any random person being there. So I love watching because I try to go in and answer questions too. But sometimes I sit back and just go, oh, that person got that. I don't need to answer that. They answered it better than I might.
That's excellent. So yeah, so it's a little more serious and dedicated group than just, you know, out there on the internet.
Yeah, and then it's, you know, less hostile, like, you know, like social media can, I don't know if you've known this, but social media can be a little hostile sometimes. So it's a lot friendlier.
Yeah, imagine that. So you also talked about book marketing. So can you explain how IBPA's cooperative marketing programs can help authors sell more books?
Absolutely. So, and this is something when I was, you know, as just an author out there trying to, you know, get the word out, First off, you know, you probably have already talked many times with your, you know, listeners about this, but I didn't even realize how much book marketing you should be doing before the book is published. And so I did some, but this is something I've learned since I've been in IBPA, where it's like, wow, people need to already know, all these markets need to know your book's coming out already. And so, you know, like the library market, for example, and I'll say, I found as I worked IBPA that as compared to bookstores, libraries are a little more receptive to the indie author and indie publisher market. Bookstores have limited space. I mean, literally, they have like it's a store and they have, you know, so much bookshelves and space, and, you know, they're going to have something on there that's going to 100% sell. And it's, and I also learned that you shouldn't take that personally, you know, where it's like they're not, they don't, it's not that they don't like your book. They literally just need to make money. And if no one's heard of it and they come in that store, they probably aren't going to buy it. So for most indie authors, I always say I would stick with like direct to consumer sales. So we have a lot of different, you know, book marketing programs. But one that I really love is, so the library market is, there's American Library Association conference every year. And every year I've been going, and God, librarians are so fun and they're so excited about books. I mean, we have a booth where the authors sign their books, and the librarians line up and they're so sweet and they're excited, and it's fun to be there and be around that excitement. So I love that program. You don't have to go in person. We do represent our members' books at the booth, but gosh, if you're close, the 2026 one's in Chicago. So if you live near Chicago, man, if you do the program through us and you can get there in person, like I'll tell you, as an author, when you're sitting there and you feel that excitement, those are the moments that make you go, okay, you know, like, because I don't know how many, you know, events you've had where you had like one person show up and you're like, why am I even doing this? Nobody cares, you know. So that kind of reinvigorates you and you go, oh, okay. No, there are people out there that are excited. You just have to go to the right audience. I really like some of our programs that are kind of like that, where you know, can do things in person.
Yeah, that is important, especially as an indie author, because it's difficult to get in, almost impossible to get into the big stores.
Mm-hmm.
And the indie stores. I mean, if you're local, maybe they might, but like their margins are so slim, you're not getting in there. So direct sales kind of are an indie author's best friend. So I love that. And yeah. And you also talked about discounts. You know, we all like to save money. So you have any highlights there that you wanted to talk about?
Oh yeah, of course. Thanks for asking. So, you know, one of the biggest ones is the Ingram Spark. Mm-hmm. So this is another thing that I didn't know. When I first had my books, I put them just on Amazon.
Yeah.
And Amazon does have a huge share of the market for books, but Ingram Sparks, and there's a few others. There's Drafted Digital. There's Book Baby. We also have a discount for that. These are places that you can then get your books distributed to all over the place. They send them to Barnes & Noble, Google, Overdrive, all these places. And you're able to get people that don't go to Amazon, you know, that, you know, there's, I mean, literally so many retail sites online. So that's a really huge one where our members get free revisions, and they get to have printing discounts. Another one's Bowker. So as your listeners may know, every book has to have an international standard book number.
Yep.
And like you have to be able to sell your book.
And they are not cheap.
And they are, they can be a bit pricey. And you can only buy them from one company.
Yep.
And that's Bowker. And you get it through myidentifiers.com. So ideally, as you were just saying, you know, you probably want to get them in bulk too, but then you're now getting 10. So we have a great partnership with Bowker, and they're the standard. So our members get a 15% discount, and it saves them a ton of money. I actually, as I've talked more with members, I didn't realize like a lot of them get like 100 or 1,000 at a time. Mm-hmm. And so, and especially like the indie publishers, you know, who are publishing a lot of books. So that 15% really adds up. There are a lot of companies out there where you need to get a trade review. If you want to get into bookstores and you want to get into libraries, especially, you need a trusted, you know, trade review. So Kirkus Reviews, Book Life with Publishers Weekly, Ford Reviews. A lot of these companies, they're really great. But again, there's a cost. There are free versions, but it can be difficult for indie authors to get the free, mm-hmm. you know, reviews. So all these companies, they partner with us and our members get discounts on them. And so that right off the bat, you know, you're saving money, $50 here, even more, sometimes $75. So those are really good to help vet your book for anybody who's going to be a bookseller, especially to know, okay, I got a good Kirkus review. You're good.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you guys do NetGalley too, which is always an expensive one. So,
NetGalley is a great program where you can get your book put onto NetGalley. It's a digital review copy or an audiobook review copy, and people download it for free. And there are about 600,000 people on there. Mm-hmm. And these are book lovers, they're librarians, they're booksellers. So it's a great audience. And then they'll leave reviews for you. And it's an honest review. But the helpful thing is your reviews then can not only be put on NetGalley, which has, you know, a ton of readers, but they automatically can have their review put onto the Amazon, Goodreads, like all these other sites. And another great thing is these are now potentially, you know, your fans. Mm-hmm. And when you do NetGalley, you get their email address and you can email them and thank you so much for that review. I really appreciate it. Can I put you on my newsletter? You know, you don't want to just automatically add them, but if you ask them and they say yes, wow, well, guess what? Next book that comes out, you have one more person or 100 more people now that you're adding to your newsletter to ideally sell your book to. So it's a great program and our members get discounts on that.
Yeah. And that is a really great strategy. You should have your own newsletter and your own list. You don't want them to be in a social media place that owns that. Mm-hmm. What other challenges do you see indie authors facing most often?
Yeah. So I'll tell you this. One is it's just the knowledge. Like we were saying, when I started out, I swear I read so much and I was like, I think I figured it out. You know, like you think you got it.
Yeah.
And once I started, you know, because new things pop up every day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, especially right now with all the new AI. Right. Yeah. So that's one of the things I learned when I was at IBPA was I was like, I'm going to learn new things every day. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to, and I just need to be aware that I need to be open to that new knowledge. AI is, I just mentioned it, is certainly something that people are on kind of both sides. You know, there's the side where it does absolutely have environmental concerns. There's also the side where it, you know, they've used the copyrighted material of authors and publishers and they didn't compensate us for that. At the other side, there are people using it and it absolutely for like automation and for your ability to make your work more efficient. I mean, it's amazing. So, but anyway, you have to decide what you want to do, but there's a lot to learn there.
Yeah.
So, every day I'm like, one of my jobs is just kind of like, well, what's new or whatever. And then figuring out, okay, so how do we break it down? So we just tell people here's what you should know. I know there's a lot of information, but just learn these five things and this will be helpful. So that's something that I absolutely learned. And something that made me feel better was that, like I said, not only are authors people that need another job, like the independent publishers, they have day jobs.
Yeah.
It initially I felt kind of bad about myself because I was like, wow, okay, I failed. I didn't make a career as an author. And I didn't realize that, you know, literally people on the bestseller list, they're yes. like professors at colleges, yes. you know, like,
I think it's like 5% of authors maybe don't have a day job. So yeah.
Right. Right. You know, and we know their names, you know, like Stephen
yeah,
King,
we do. Yes, we do.
James Patterson,
That's
stuff, you know,
it.
So, you know, like, so that made me feel better though, because, I was like, okay, it's okay that you didn't sell a million copies.
Yeah.
And I learned to figure out a new way of thinking of success. I thought, okay, every time someone emails me and says, I loved your books,
mm-hmm.
It meant a lot to me. You know, like, I'm like, that's success.
Yeah.
You know, I touched someone. Someone was moved by my story. My books are about animal issues, and they hopefully inspire people to be compassionate toward animals.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they've said, you know, I went vegan because I read your book, you know, and I'm like, okay, that's why I wrote them, you know, like, and so whatever, I don't have to, you know, whatever, make millions of dollars from them. So yeah, that helped me to figure out a new way to do it. And again, in a lot of ways, this job has allowed me to learn so much and make so many connections with people. I'm just grateful to be in this world. And again, at this, in this capacity, so that I'm, meeting so many people, you know, there's people like yourself going to give conferences. And then all of our members, you know, when they email me, ask me a question, if I don't know it, the answer, I'm like, okay, cool. Now I'm going to learn something new.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's really what it's all about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I wanted to ask that I was just interested to learn more about when I was poking around the site, what is the Innovative Voices program?
Oh, thanks for asking about it. Yeah. So a few years ago, you know, we really genuinely want to make sure that we have everyone has the, like, a level playing field, and we want to make sure that they're historically communities from marginalized communities really haven't had as much of a chance to succeed in publishing. They've been gatekeepers, and we wanted to make sure that we gave them an opportunity to support them. So the program, I developed it, and it was one of those things that, you know, we had talked about, and finally was like, we need to find a way to do this. So the program has all these benefits. So Ingram Spark is a sponsor. So grateful to them. They give free printing up to 250 books. They do a cash donation. They also help give a sponsorship where they cover the cost for these five publishers who were chosen to be able to go to publishing university. Like, and it's, you know, the hotel, the travel, all that. And so we're very grateful to them. Gatekeeper Press is also, they're supporting. They give a donation of cash to the publishers. And then multiple other companies, you mentioned NetGalley, they give benefits. So the publishers do the program for a year. They get a mentor as part of it as well. And we really are trying to give them, we were talking about a community. It's only five publishers. And
yeah.
So that group becomes like a mini family within the publishing world where they can now rely on each other. And then each year we've done, this is the third year, we just opened the application. It closes January 15th. So if people go to our site like you did, they can read about it and apply. There's a list of criteria. So I recommend, you know, I'm not going to go through all of it, but there's like five things they have to, you know, required that to be able to do it. But it's something where, you know, we're a nonprofit at IBPA. And so it's a way for us to give back and be helpful. And especially to communities that have been overlooked for too long. So thanks for asking about it. I appreciate
that. Yeah, well, that's amazing. I also wanted to ask about the podcast. You do a podcast as well?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, you and I are trying to battle for the podcast voice right now.
There
I'm
we
trying
go.
To make sure that, so yeah, IBPA, we have Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA, and we focus on publishing specifically. So a lot of different topics, and I'm the host, and we try to make sure that each episode is like actionable mm-hmm. things that people can learn, where it's like, okay, you go out and do these whatever five things. And the other thing I love about it is a lot of times I'll interview people that are publishers and authors, and just hearing their story, I think, you know, there's a lot to be learned from just other people's experiences. So I always ask them, you know, where they started, kind of like what you did with me, you know, where, how did you get into this? And I also try to make sure that we're candid, you know, where we talk about like, what are the things that you're struggling with, you know? Because if we sit around and go, being an author is the greatest thing in the world, we're all millionaires. It's crazy. You know, like if we all pretend that we're more successful than we are, it's only a disservice to everyone who out there who's like, really? Oh, okay, I guess I'm not doing it right. You know, it's like, let's just be honest. We're, you know, a lot of us are doing our best, but that doesn't, you know, and again, if you change your concept of success, it's really helpful to hear other people talk about it. And then look, if they made a mistake, they probably, hopefully, resolved it, right? They're still publishing. So what did they do to resolve that? And so yeah, I really genuinely love chatting with people about all that.
Great. That sounds like a fa fantastic resource for people looking to learn more. And just for a new author who maybe wants to learn more about IBPA or to get started with it, what resource would you point them toward?
Of course, yeah, thank you. Yeah, so it's IBPA-online.org is our website, and then we have a place, why join or the benefits. So we have the list of benefits by whatever your business model is. So if you're an independent publisher, author publisher, right? So go on there and look at that. But just go to that page and see what's a good fit for you, you know? And, you know, an author publisher is someone who, AKA self-published. And then an author is someone else published you. So, we have different benefits for each, but, you know, we also have free resources, you know, like, I mean, your podcast is free, our podcast is free, you know, so you can go on the site and just, you know, learn about publishing too. But ideally, if you join, then you'll have access to all the other benefits. But yeah, I hope people go to the site and of course, people can just reach out to me, and I'm happy to chat with them and answer their questions. As I said, I get great joy from knowing, like every day, like I am helping other people succeed in publishing, and you know, I love that my job is this as compared to whatever, you know, like something that's completely unrelated to publishing. Because every day I'll, you know, get an email, like I said, from someone, or I'll, you know, read an article or whatever I'm doing, and I'll be like, wow, okay, I need to start doing that. And it's like free, like whatever, I do make a salary, but in addition, it's like, you know, a little bonus each day. So yeah, I really love it.
That's great. So thank you so much for coming on and talking to us all about IBPA.
Christine, I can't tell you, it's an honor. Thank you, and thank you for what you all do on your podcast to get the word out. And you're an accomplished author yourself, so thank you.
Okay. So JD's the only member of IBPA here, right? And he's not here today.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool. I love private Slack groups. I don't know if you've been in these for publishing stuff, getting your questions answered. Do you belong to any of these or have you in the past?
No,
No.
I despise all of that. So
Kevin is what we call antisocial.
I wouldn't call myself antisocial. I just don't want to interact with other human beings.
Right,
I used to
exactly.
love it.
I've just never been invited. So.
I was in a very good one that no longer exists, and it was very cool because it
Yeah.
would just be like, what cover designer did you use for this? Or like, how do you think my cover looks? Or who are you using for, you know, and you get some recommendations. Or if you have a question, how do I post a KDP or whatever from newbie to, you know, and then we'd have like these mastermind groups where we get together with people at the same level or above. And what are you doing? And here's my problem and help me solve this. So I liked it a lot, but
I
yeah.
think networking is like drastically underrated, particularly, you know, in an industry. I think like publishing is a weird space because I think unlike all the other creative arts, I think that they, well, maybe not like if you're into sculpting or painting, but you know, music, acting, those types of things, I think attract extroverts. But writing and publishing tends to attract introverts. And I think that networking doesn't necessarily come as naturally, you know, with that, especially when, you know, you're just like by yourself for a chunk of time
Yeah.
writing 90,000 words of made up people, right? Like
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a strange place to then just be like, I'm gonna go interact with people.
Yeah, and I honestly I think the biggest reason that I don't do groups like this and join these things is because I get all of this from all the conferences and all the podcasts and things that I do, and so it sort of filled that void, I guess. So I guess in reality, I actually am doing this. I'm just not doing it in one spot with the same group of people over and over again. So.
There is something though, I think. I mean, like, yeah, podcasts are, I don't know. There is something about being able to like interact directly though. I think
We'll
that,
have someone answer your question
yeah,
and
that can
follow up
kind of
with them.
help. But
yeah,
I mean
and develop a
that's what I'm talking about
relationship with
though.
them. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
I mean,
relationship is
like
something
this is a
that's
podcast. We are interacting with each other. We're answering each other's questions. I mean, it's
well,
what's the difference?
yes. Yeah. Well, because it's just four of us, five of us ish. I think these groups tend to be larger, right, Christine? Like,
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
you have
That's the
access to just
problem.
more. It's not, no, you need it for like the experience to get the variety of opinions, you know, to like not just hear one perspective,
Yeah,
but
it's great to have some great recommends for like, and you know, for sure. Like, I've got some valuable stuff out of them, Kevin. Don't you gotta.
Perspective, I think, is important. And like, 'cause, you know, I think that social media in particular, the internet, like all of it, we can sort of create, like, we can dig into our own biases so easily now, right? You can just like find confirmation for whatever you want to hear. And I do think it's important to like actively seek out opposing things and alternate perspectives. And I think larger groups tend to allow for that a bit more.
That's where you and I are different.
Okay, I am interested about this. Christopher said libraries are more receptive to indie authors than bookstores. What do you think about that? Have you found that to be the case?
I could see it. I haven't directly experienced that per se. I do know that when I have spoken at a lot of libraries, especially high school level libraries, but
Yeah.
some local public libraries as well. And they do they treat you very well. They treat you as an honored guest. You know, they don't bat an eye about you being indie. So maybe I've gotten more benefit from that than I think,
Yeah.
but. Bookstores are harder because, like, I remember going to my local bookstore here in the Austin area, and they gave me this sheet of all the rules, and it was, number one was that you had to be published somewhere other than just Amazon, which, I absolutely was, but it just sort of immediately started, it set the tone right away that you're not
Yeah.
an author unless you adhere to all these. Here we're going to define what an author is, and you may not be it. That so
Yeah.
that puts a sour taste in your mouth, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I get it. Like he said, they have to sell books, right? And so they
Right.
need books that are going to sell. It's harder for them to take a chance with the
Yeah.
margins that they have.
Yeah. It's
Do any.
understandable. It just still
Yeah, it's
sucks.
understand. I know, but I'm like, I get it. If I was in their position, I get it. Do you use NetGalley? Have you used NetGalley before, Kevin?
Nah, I've looked into it. I've never really
You've
tried
never
it.
done it. I've only done it
No.
like you know, as part of the co-author stuff, so I don't really
Yeah,
have behind
yeah.
the scene.
I've done it as a reader. I can tell you I love it as a reader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you got reader emails though, like from NetGalley as an author. Did you know this? Like
Oh,
you could put them on
handy.
your. Yeah, I think I was like, that's awesome. There's so much about IBPA that I don't know, so I need to do some exploring.
Yeah, I
I
need
think
to
it'd be
dumb
useful for
down.
me.
It's been one of those things where it's been on my radar for years. And when I was at Draft to Digital, we did some stuff with IBPA and sponsored some things. But I don't know. I get overwhelmed by all the things I know I should be doing that I end
Yeah.
up not doing most of them, and just kind of go my own way,
Yeah.
which is maybe not my best plan. Maybe I
Yeah.
need to start planning. You think I should start planning
That can be
things?
part of your New Year's resolution.
Would be helpful.
My plan for 2026, I want to change my answer, is now to start planning more.
Perfect.
I like it. Perfect. Excellent.
Awesome.
I may not start till
And
2027.
you could ask Christopher your questions about publishing. Reach out and
Yeah, I could do that.
there you go.
You could network and plan at the same time.
I don't have any questions about publishing. I'm
Awesome.
good.
All right.
All
Amazing.
right, let's talk about who's up next week. So up next week, it's Amy Sudow. Amy began her career as a Hollywood TV writer before hitting the road and becoming a digital nomad and a six-figure freelance writer. Now she travels the world while ghostwriting memoirs and working on her own projects. And she is going to talk to us about her new book, Write for Money and Power. So that's next week, Amy Sudow. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.